Welcome to Conversations on Healthcare with Mark Maselli and Margaret Flinter. Mark is the founder, president, and CEO of Community Health Center Incorporated, a provider of primary healthcare services for the uninsured and underserved in 13 cities and 218 service locations in Connecticut. Margaret is Senior Vice President and Clinical Director of CHC and is a family nurse practitioner by profession. Conversations on Healthcare is a weekly look at the people and ideas that are transforming the delivery of healthcare in America. And this week, Mark and Margaret will be speaking with Dr. Frederick Southwick, author of Critically Ill, a 5-point plan to cure healthcare delivery. In the Tech Report segment, Marianne O'Hare looks at a computer chip designed to help prevent heart disease. And we begin with this week's bright idea.
Each week, Conversations highlights a bright idea about how to make wellness a part of our communities and everyday lives.
When the federal health reform measure goes into effect in 2014, millions of Americans are going to be added to insurance rolls, adding pressure to primary care systems that already are experiencing a shortage of practitioners. It's expected that community health centers will become vitally important venues for serving the health needs of these additionally insured Americans. The Blue Shield of California Foundation, one of California's largest healthcare grant-making organizations, sees this as a critical time to bolster community health centers to better accommodate the wave of new patients while maximizing opportunities presented with the Affordable Care Act. Since 2003, when they launched the Clinic Core Support Initiative, the foundation has donated $47 million to clinics throughout California to improve their ability to provide quality care to the underserved population. CEO Peter Long last week announced an additional $7 million grant to strengthen the state's network of community health centers. The money is being earmarked to assist existing clinics with operating funds, assist some clinics in better utilization of electronic medical records, and create a database from the state's highest performing health clinics to provide a model of excellence for other clinics to strive towards, including training the next generation of community health center leaders. A health foundation, funding improvements to clinics and healthcare training to improve access to quality care for our most vulnerable citizens. Now that's a bright idea. Today, Margaret and I are speaking with Dr. Frederick Southwick, professor of medicine at the University of Florida in the infectious disease division. He's also a Harvard fellow at the Advanced Leadership Institute and author of Critically Ill, a 5-point plan to cure healthcare delivery, which comes out soon. Dr. Southwick, welcome to Conversations on Healthcare.
Thank you, Mark.
As an internist and infectious disease specialist for over 30 years, you've seen a lot of misdiagnosed and medical errors during that time. In fact, your former wife was at one time a victim of a series of medical errors that almost cost her her life. And I think it's well known that the medical errors or mistake cause probably over 100,000 deaths per year. Could you start off with the larger picture and shape up the dimensions for our audience of what the costs are to the healthcare system, both in terms of human toll and financial cost as well?
Yes, I think, Mark, these are the key elements and one of the primary motivators for me to write this book. And the case that I describe in the book about Mary, I think, reflects that human toll. This is only one person, one family. So if there are 100,000 deaths, there are probably over 1 million injuries that are very profound, probably more than that. And not only that, each individual has at least 10 close family members or friends that are profoundly impacted by that death. And they never, I can tell you from my own personal experience, you never forget what happened to a loved one. That remains with you the rest of your life. But also the caregivers that make these errors due to poor systems, they are what we call second victims. They also suffer. If a nurse gives a wrong medication and it kills a patient, imagine how that nurse feels. Mm-hmm. In general, they actually, in most cases, they leave the profession and move on because they cannot deal with the suffering and pain that they actually cause. And then if you look at the finances, I actually broke down the cost of Mary's care. If it had been routine, her care would have cost about $16,000. While if, because of the complications and errors, the actual cost was more like $95,000, if there are 100,000 deaths, it's somewhere in the order of $20 to $30 billion in losses. So so these are huge amounts of money that we really can't afford. And on top of that, a much more, to me, a greater concern is the personal cost of these kinds of injuries and deaths.
Dr. Southwick, you begin each chapter of your book with a compelling detail or a question from the experience of your former wife and the medical crisis and near death from a series of disasters. And it's a very gripping personal story. But you make the point that you blamed the doctors initially in her case for their mistakes, but didn't start to really understand the systemic nature of the underlying problems in care delivery until you started seriously studying other models like in automobile manufacturing. What can we learn from those systems, like manufacturing systems, that can fundamentally help improve health systems and safety?
I think what happens to all families are they blame the person who specifically cared for their loved one. And that's exactly what I did until I understood that these caregivers, I mean, they were partly to blame, but they were victims of very poor systems. And I actually heard a talk by a very outstanding person in the field, Steve Speer, who's at MIT. He talked about the DNA of Toyota and how it could be applied to healthcare. And I have to tell you, this was 15 years after the episode, I started crying because I realized that I had blamed those individuals rather than blaming the systems as well. And what we've learned is in most situations, errors are not caused by bad people. They are caused by bad systems. So now what can you learn? Well, Toyota, I think, have been the leaders for over 60 years in an effort to improve quality, to reduce defects in their cars. And the three key elements of Toyota as, first of all, protocols. Every procedure must be carefully outlined and done in the same way. And each of those protocols can be improved and perfected. So that's the first. The second is customer-supplier relationships. In Toyota, one of the key customers is, for instance, if you're the part supplier for a frontline worker on the assembly line, that assembly line person is your customer, and you respond to them very quickly when they need something. And this is a major problem in healthcare, that we don't understand who the customers are, and we don't respond properly. And the third, and very, very important, is constantly improving, looking at your processes, empowering everyone on the front lines, middle management, wherever, looking at the processes and deciding how they may be improved. In this way, Toyota has dramatically reduced the cost of their cars and at the same time dramatically improve the quality of their cars. If we could do the same thing in healthcare, we could dramatically improve the quality of care and reduce the errors.
Dr. Southwick, in addition to your research and ideas about using other industries like Toyota and lean processes, you've also starting to look at other disciplines from the world of sports. How do you envision medical teams using playbooks, and what other ideas from the world of professional team sports can also be brought to tackling the problem, if you will, in healthcare?
At the University of Florida, we've had a number of championship teams, and I was actually an athlete. I played football at Yale and also lacrosse at Yale. Championship athletic team. The team that wins makes the fewest errors. And what's powerful about that from an American standpoint is virtually everyone at some time in their lives has played a team sport or they are watch team sports. Therefore, we already understand how to work in teams. We already understand the concept of protocols, because a playbook is a protocol, and that's exactly what we need in healthcare. We in healthcare know so much, and our vocabulary is so different that we need to look through the eyes of our patients, and that is a very important customer-supplier relationship. And the third key element is what's called in sports game film. The coaches video all games and then play them back to the players later, and they go over what went well, and they go over what could be improved. Now, if each of us in healthcare would look at ourselves and say what went well and what we could improve, we could get better and better and better. And really, improvement is an iterative process. In other words, it's small steps, it's continually getting feedback, and then improving based on that feedback.
Dr. Southwick, you wrote the book with a longtime nursing colleague, Dr. Dina Treloar. You seem to clearly see that the further empowerment of nurses is one critical milestone in improving the quality of care and safety for patients. I wonder if you'd share with us what are your ideas or best practices on further leadership, governance, and autonomy systems that really do empower nurses, but not just nurses, empower all members of the medical team that take care of patients.
As I analyze this situation, I realize nurses are the front line of care. They are the ones that are with the patients the majority of the time and doing other treatments, and therefore, if the systems are bad, they're the ones that make the error because the systems are bad, and they suffer the consequences. And most important, nurses have no conflict of interest. In other words, they get paid to care and empathize and comfort their patients. So one of the things that I've found that's most important is to always focus on the patient. And since nurses do that, I encourage them that they be the patient advocate. When they see themselves in that role, they're much more willing to speak out. One of the huge problems in healthcare is what I call the command and control model of leadership. In other words, the head of the hospital commands everybody below them to do things. This simply will not work when it comes to high-quality systems, and everybody in manufacturing, in fact, the military now has realized that you have to empower those on the front lines to be leaders and to speak out and make suggestions for improvement, and those high above have to listen to those suggestions and help to implement them. Nurses, virtually all caregivers, have to understand that each of us contributes in a different way, and each of our contributions is equally valuable. In fact, in some cases, I believe nurses' care is the most, I do believe, is the most valuable part of patient care. They should be willing always to speak out when there's something that's not going right with their patients. And one of the ways we've emphasized that is we always, on work rounds, we schedule our rounds so that the nurses know, the bedside nurses know when we're going to be there, and we create a huddle, and we make sure that the nurse is in that huddle. And when you have a circle, then everybody feels much more equal.
What a great approach. We're speaking today with Dr. Frederick Southwick, professor of medicine at the University of Florida, Harvard Fellow in the Advanced Leadership Initiative, and author of a soon-to-be-released book, Critically Ill, A Five-Point Plan to Cure Healthcare Delivery. You know, your approach has been really to sort of the bigger picture of how to eliminate types of waste and ineffectiveness in the current system. You've also been very critical of the overuse of testing. How is the reliance on expensive and unnecessary tests endangering our patients?
One of the big problems is that physicians who order most of these tests have not worried about cost or worried that much about or minimized the likelihood of a complication from a test or a procedure. And what's happened is they don't think about what the likely effect of their procedure is going to be or their test is going to be. In other words, they don't ask themselves, how will I change my management if this test is positive or if this test is negative? Many of the times it turns out that they're simply confirmatory and are what I call icing on the cake. They really don't benefit. So not MRIs are actually very safe unless you happen to have a pacemaker, but other procedures are not. For instance, cardiac catheterization, very commonly used today. And that procedure has a certain known side effects. For instance, I've seen several patients bleed into the back of the retroperitoneal area. And what's happened is when you increase the capacity to do cardiac catheterizations, it's been shown that the cardiologists will do more of these procedures. And some, quite often, they are not necessary. In other words, they don't really change the therapy significantly. So the test becomes overused. And the more you do that, the more likely you are to have a complication.
Dr. Southwick, you are obviously a lifelong learner, and I really enjoyed reading about a labor-intensive, you described it, course you took, I think, at the Kennedy School. And you said it taught me the fundamental campaign techniques used by politicians and unions and reformers to organize people. So tell us, how are you going to use the art of persuasion to move things forward, not just in one teaching hospital or in one profession, but really across the country as we enter this period of time when the Affordable Care Act hopefully will be implemented? What's the art of persuasion you're going to use?
In order to organize people to change how they think about the world, you have to actively involve them and recruit them to take action. So a good organizer is a person who meets people one-on-one, finds that we share values together, and then develops a leadership group, then steps back and allows that group to create a strategy and tactics to bring about a change that they think is important within an institution. This chapter, to me, is the most important for healthcare because the culture right now, I think, is caregiver-focused. And one of the key elements, and I've actually been working, we have a campaign at the University of Florida now based on these principles called the Physician I Promise Campaign. And each physician is working as an individual, is promising to, in some way, enhance our patients' experience when they're in the hospital. And what we've done is I've empowered a leadership group of young physicians who are very energetic, very talented, and they have we've created together a series of forums. We have a, we had a doctor-patient communication forum, and we recruited patients to describe their personal experiences interacting with physicians, and we've had a second forum on doctor-nurse communication, and we had nurses describe how they see a communication with physicians and how that could be improved. And by doing this throughout the country, I think we can dramatically change the attitudes. One of the sad things to me that I just don't understand is that so many people in our country are against universal coverage.
Mm-hmm.
We know, it's been well shown that we talk about deaths, we know that those are not covered
mm-hmm.
because they lack health care coverage. We know there are 45,000 deaths per year
mm-hmm.
due to lack of coverage. How can we as a people not be concerned about our fellow man? And similarly, what we're doing in physicians, we're asking physicians to get outside of themselves and to focus on our patients, focus on working better with our nurses, focusing on teamwork. And that's what we as a nation need to do. We need to focus on teamwork, on being a community and caring about everyone and not just ourselves.
Hmm. Well, you're right on about the access and certainly about the change of culture that's needed in the system. I know at our health center, we're a patient level 3 patient-centered medical home, but you know, we're still looking at how to improve that. We brought together the Dartmouth Institute with the GE lean manufacturing people and really looking through the process of how do we build a high-quality, safe, efficient, and patient-centered primary care home.
Right,
and you
right.
are very focused in on patient-centered care, doing more to respect the dignity of every patient while at the same time making it more efficient and streamlined. Talk to us a little bit about that.
We've worked on this the most is a rounding system that I've developed, it's based on athletic principles. We call it Gator Rounds, and because the University of Florida mascot is the Gator.
We got that one.
Yeah, and Gatorade, so we call it Gator Rounds, you know, after Gatorade. One of the key elements of all athletics and all systems is the fundamentals. And one of the key fundamentals is how we communicate efficiently. So what we did is we created very efficient, and whenever possible, we actually try to do all rounding in the patient's room. So one of the things that I've emphasized is obviously athletics means teamwork. A key member of the team has to be the patient, and somehow this is ignored. Who's going to take care of themselves 95% of the time? So if we don't include them in the team, when they leave the hospital, they aren't going to know what to do. And I think perceiving them as a member of the team makes them more equal, because after all, it's their body, it's their lives, and we really need to listen to what their concerns are so that they will comply, so they will follow the treatment plan.
Dr. Southwick, one more sort of question I'd like to go at relative to the people who provide the care. And you've talked about burnout as a huge concern. It's a huge concern along the whole continuum of care. And I thought you made the great observation that if a patient or their family sees their caregivers looking exhausted and harried, beware, because that burnout can have a direct impact on quality and safety as well. Tell us about this 5-point plan you've written about and how that might really increase the vitality and well-being for the whole healthcare team.
Anyone who influences others to improve the care of our patients is a healthcare leader, and that means everyone in the system can be a leader. Now, when everybody feels empowered to bring about change, they develop a new autonomy, a new sense of significance that makes their job so much more enjoyable. And so that was one key, is leadership, I realized. Then obviously we need to understand manufacturing athletic systems. We need to understand the nature of human errors and how to assess those human errors and create systems to improve them. And then one of the most important elements, the fourth element, is teamwork. We, many doctors and particularly physicians, I think, don't understand how to work well in teams. The sole practitioner model, the Marcus Welby model, still persists in the minds of many physicians. We need to understand that we have to work in teams and be coaches rather than dictate what goes on. And then the fifth element, which we've talked about, is learning how to bring about cultural change. Each of us can campaign to bring about cultural change. So if you create a positive culture, if each of us feels we are a leader and autonomous, if each of us is within a system that is efficient and reduces waste, if each of us is in a system that minimizes errors, then each of us feels part of a team and has a team spirit, we will create a true joy at work, and each of us will become more focused on the ultimate goal, which is improve the well-being of our patients.
Well said. Dr. Southwick, we'd like to ask all of our guests this final question. When you look around the country and around the world as it relates to improving healthcare, who should our listeners at Conversations be keeping an eye on?
Well, one of the things that I think you'll notice is that most of the dialogue is by politicians, administrators, economists, and the actual caregivers and the patients are not speaking out. And my hope is that through this book and through interviews such as yours, that we will begin to hear those that are on the front lines that are either benefiting or being harmed by the care, and those who are giving the care and are affected by these the systems that we have, will begin to actually speak out on what is needed to improve patient care.
We've been speaking today with Dr. Frederick Southwick, professor of medicine at the University of Florida in the Division of Infectious Diseases and Harvard Fellow at the Advanced Leadership Institute. He's also the author of Critically Ill, a 5-point plan to cure healthcare delivery, which comes out soon. Dr. Southwick, thank you so much for joining us today on Conversations.
Thank you. I enjoyed talking to you.
I'm Mariano Hare with this tech report. A genomics researcher has developed a tool that has helped scientists across multiple countries and dozens of heart studies identify what could be the next target area for preventing and treating heart disease, the world's leading killer. Dr. Brendan Keating of the Center for Applied Genomics at Children's Hospital of Philadelphia designed a chip that could cross-reference up to 1 million potential gene variants per person and which ones were likely to lead to heart disease.
2,000 heart genes, but about 50,000 markers. And then it was genotyped in about 210,000 individuals across 60 different studies.
Meaning a possible new treatment using anti-inflammatories to either prevent or treat the illness.
It's very tough right now to assess an individual risk based upon that, but it just gives us a very strong indication that that inflammation is a key mediator in coronary heart disease.
The CardioChip, a prime example of how open source science and technology are intersecting to speed up discoveries for the source of illnesses and possible preventive treatments and cures. I'm Mariano Hare.
If you have questions for Mark Maselli and Margaret Flinter, or would like to subscribe to the Conversations podcast, you can visit them on the web at chc1.com. The Health Forum is a Connecting Our Communities initiative from Connecticut Public Broadcasting in partnership with area nonprofits, and production support for Conversations on Healthcare has been provided in part by Community Health Center Incorporated. You're listening to WNPR, Connecticut's public radio station.